The Night Owl Podcast, Campfire Episode 11, A Haunting Abroad. Welcome to the Night Owl Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Ballou, and this is a place for all you restless spirits out there to tune in and hear true tales of the paranormal. I hunt these stories down, capture them from the mouths of those who experience them, and share them with you, right here. If you have a story to tell, we're currently looking for more personal ghost stories, so if you or someone you know has one, please submit it to us for consideration. Go to thenightowlpodcast.com, click on the Submit Your Story page, and let us hear your ghost story. We'd love to consider it for the show. As we settle around the campfire tonight, prepare to be transported, not just spiritually, but geographically, overseas, all the way to France. Our storyteller tonight is Caroline, and she'll take us back, many years ago, to 2003, to a time when she was studying abroad in France and encountered two women, both angry, both French, and both dead. The two stories she's about to share are very personal and have been long held as a private experience she's kept secret. One takes place in an idyllic French countryside farmhouse with an angry presence that not only appeared to Caroline in the home, but many other students as well. The other tale will take us to a boathouse and involves a disturbing dream, a scuttled boat, and an unsolved murder on the River Seine in France. Stay tuned. This episode is sponsored by Green Mountain Flower Company, dedicated to one thing: bringing wellness to the world through concentrated, terpene-rich CBD oil sourced from organic premium industrial hemp. At Green Mountain Flower Company, they believe in the power of the human spirit and have designed an incredible lineup of CBD products for you. They have infused coffees, pain-relieving balms, tinctures, supplements, gummies, and even dog treats. When it comes to your health or your pets, cutting corners isn't an option. Everything Green Mountain Flower Company sells is 100% organic, gluten-free, non-GMO, and without heavy metals or insecticides. And right now, through October, Night Owl listeners can get 10% off all of their products. So visit greenmountainflowercompany.com, use coupon code NIGHTOWL, and harness the healing power of CBD. At Green Mountain Flower Company, the purity of nature is in every drop. Any longtime listener of the show knows the origin of how it all started. My lifelong interest in the paranormal, combined with my need to share this interest with others in an artistic outlet, led to the birth of the Night Owl Podcast. Bringing my psychic friend Sarah on board for that very first episode has proven to be a very enlightening experience for myself, Sarah, and the many listeners who have come to appreciate the show. Sarah evolved from someone not entirely sure of her gift or how to use it into someone who now embraces her talent and uses it to communicate with the many spirits out there who seek her help or answers. Over the past 3 years, the Night Owl Podcast has produced 11 campfire episodes, lending a platform for people all over the world to share their personal unexplained experiences. We've also produced 29 investigative episodes where we have hunted down haunted locations, captured those stories from the mouths of those who experienced them, and tried to provide some validation of those tales through our investigations and the use of Sarah's special gift. One of the surprising results of putting out this show is the many people who, after listening, have contacted us to thank us and let us know that they too have experienced some sort of paranormal experience. After hearing our show, along with Sarah's work, they have begun to realize that they too possess a gift and are not alone in that respect. They may not know how to fully make use of it, or they may even be suppressing it out of fear or anxiety, but many have admitted that the show has pushed them to accept it more, and in some cases, have embraced it. Tonight's storyteller, Caroline, is one such listener. Caroline admits that she could see things that others could not, going back as far as the age of 8. Growing up, she had many paranormal experiences, but she eventually chose to suppress her ability. Perhaps out of fear or uncertainty, or because she doubted anyone would believe her. Caroline actually braved the stage and told these two personal tales that you're about to hear for the first time ever to a live audience at our annual October Live event last year, A Nightmare on Frew Street. The stories were so stirring, I wanted to recapture them more intimately and reshare them with you here tonight on this campfire. So let's settle in, grab a cup of whiskey or coffee, and let's get transported to France.
My name is Caroline Reck. I am a puppeteer and theater performer. I run a company called Glass Half Full Theater here in Austin, Texas. We do a lot of work with live actors and puppets, mostly working with social justice and environmental justice stories that we like to bring to life in a really intimate and clever visual sort of way. And I had these stories and kind of a lifelong experience of experiencing ghosts and other sort of supernatural phenomena since the time I was really like 8, 9, 10 years old was when I first started experiencing it. But I'm going to tell you about when I started wanting not to experience it anymore. When I was 23 years old, I was driving late at night. I think it was about midnight. And I suddenly swerved my car to avoid colliding with another car that wasn't actually there. I saw this car approaching me. It was an early model Ford. And I only saw it for a few seconds, and it was careening straight at me. And then as I swerved and got out of its path, it vanished. I kind of screeched to a halt on the side of the street, and my heart was pounding. And I realized I had just stopped kind of in the middle of an intersection in the middle of the night. But nobody else was on the road. And in my mind, however, kind of played out what would happen if I had, you know, collided with somebody with my vehicle after swerving to avoid a car that wasn't there. And I pictured trying to explain my actions to a cop or my family or my friends. And I think that was the moment for me that I sort of decided to stop letting the spirits in. I was over it. I didn't want to see them. I didn't want to join them. I didn't want to cause anyone any harm. I was basically exhausted from trying to live a life of figuring out who was real and who wasn't real. So I shut them out. I thought. Before that time, they would come up to me, spirits, just almost like they were just kind of checking in, just kind of, hey. Sometimes they would be like balls of energy, little like kind of balls of light. Sometimes they were squiggly lines of movement, like present but not super visible. And a lot of the time they were just fully embodied people that weren't actually there, that looked just a little bit off, a little bit unusual. And it would take me a minute sometimes to realize that they weren't. There was one guy in particular who came a lot. He was a really tall figure that would show up at a bookstore that I worked at in high school. And he would just show up and watch me until I made eye contact. And once I made eye contact with him, he'd sort of hold the contact for a few seconds, and then he'd do this little like wink, like a little grin and wink, and disappear. And he'd usually be, you know, like a few yards away. He wasn't right next to me. He'd always be in this upstairs corner of the room near the, you know, information desk where I worked. Sometimes he'd be seated on a chair or kind of peeking at me, and then as soon as I saw him, he'd disappear. And one time I actually even saw him out the window, which was the second story window, which doesn't really make any sense, but he was just standing straight outside the window in the dark, like peeking up against it. I used to call him Abe in my head because he was kind of tall and skinny, and he had an old-fashioned outfit, you know, with the dark clothes and everything and the hat, which made me think of Abraham Lincoln. And he was actually that corner of the store was the poli-sci section, so it just made sense to me. But I didn't tell anybody about it. This is all, you know, privately inside my head. I thought of this guy's Lincoln. I didn't tell anyone. I had, every time somebody would come up to me, I got kind of this strong sense that I should keep quiet about it. Like, don't tell anyone. It's a secret. Just, we're here. You're here. Move on. So whenever the spirits would show up, I kind of felt like Novocaine had been shot through my body, and I was just, I felt like supernaturally calm in my moments of interaction with them. And then that would like lead on, even after they'd leave, I would just feel like, okay, well, that happened and now we move on. And I didn't have a sense I should tell anybody about it. So that was kind of a normal occurrence until that time at 23 when the car, when I didn't hit the Model T Ford. And after that moment, I really started shutting them out. I was avoiding them, and I thought I could control this capacity to stop them from coming. But the irony is, I think what happened was I was shutting out the like the nice, good, casual ones who were looking for help or for company, and I wasn't doing a very good job of shutting out the ones that had an agenda or that were angry when I was on their territory, where they were in their element and I was out of mine. So I want to talk about really the angry spirits that I encountered. They're both women, both really angry, both French, whom I encountered in France, in the country they lived in and died in. And they died years before I ever lived in their country. So I moved to Paris when I was 24, shortly after I made this decision to study at a school. I'm a theater artist. There's a famous school there that I wanted to attend. And at that school, I encountered some other students in a similar discipline to me who had this idea of, during our kind of break from sessions, that we would all go to the farmhouse that belonged to the family of one of the students so we could work on creating a show. And I thought, yeah, okay, great. This school is really known for creating sort of cadre of students who all work together and create original works, and I wanted to be a participant in this. So I went to this house. It's in central France. It's a really picturesque, beautiful town. You know, there were cows with a little farm and woods, and it should really have been kind of an adorable, quaint experience. But from the moment we pulled up to the house, there was this really strong feeling that intensified as soon as we walked in the door. Our host, the guy whose family owned the house, showed us all around this little crazy cute little house, you know, to where each person would be sleeping. And he said, he showed me they called it the library. It was like a little kind of attic room, kind of a 10 by 10 little room with eaves, and it's stuffed full of books. And this should have been my dream, right? I worked in a bookstore in high school. Like, this should have been the perfect place for me to cozy up in an adorable French farmhouse and, you know, tell stories about it to my kids years later. But the presence in the room was suffocating. I couldn't see anything. I was used to kind of something presenting itself. I didn't see anything at all. But it was like a fury that resonated through the whole space. And it didn't seem like it was directed at me, but it was overwhelming. And it felt like somebody was screaming in my ear. Like, the host was still speaking to me and saying, okay, this is where you sleep, and don't worry, here's some blankets. And I remember, you know, shaking my head and nodding and trying to say words and pretend I was hearing what he was saying, but it was just like somebody was screaming, like whisper screaming in my ear in surround sound. So I kind of faked my way through that conversation and set my stuff inside the door and pretended I was going to go explore and look at cows. But basically, I had to get out of there, and there was no way I was going to sleep in there.
My name is Mariana. I'm from Denmark. I went to school in Paris, a school called the Shacklecock, it's a theater school, where I met Caroline Reck. And a group of us from the school decided to use the summer to make a play. And one of the guys in the group, Emmanuel, had this house in the south of France. It's a beautiful house, big garden, swimming pool. And it was very nice. So, like, when we got there, it was a really beautiful place. Anyway, from the first day, they started talking about this ghost downstairs that they could feel. Some of them could see it, and they really didn't like it. And it got more and more, in my ears, hysterical. Like, even people who hadn't experienced it, I found was getting a little bit hysterical. And I wasn't sure if I should believe it. I just think this is some hysteria, because we had some conflicts. Of course you do. When you do theater, there's conflicts, and they go away and new conflicts turn up. And that's just kind of the process. So that's fine. But to me, I thought that it was more the conflicts that made this kind of ghost thing happen. We had to get all settled in, and there was, if I remember it right, it was like mostly sleeping rooms upstairs, and then of course kitchen, living room stuff, and one sleeping room downstairs. And the downstairs one was the one that most of us would like, because you could, that's the one where there was only one, it was a big bed, but it was only one bed, so you could have it by yourself. So we decided to, you know, take turns on that one if we needed to, some space for ourselves. So I went upstairs the first days. So after some days, nobody wanted to stay downstairs. It's like, fine, I'll take that room downstairs. Also, I wanted to have some time by myself. This day, when I decided to go in that room, a cat in the house started following me around. And this was one thing that some of the other girls had talked about, that the cat would follow them around and then the ghost would show itself to them in the evening. That's something I remember in retrospect, because we talked about it, but I didn't think of it that day. I just remember I had that cat in my tail. While we were in the house, it was by my feet all the time. This day, I felt extremely disconnected from the rest of the group, kind of depressed, actually. But I laid it on the conflicts, like I didn't think any of it yet. So I had this cat following me around, even in the garden, it would just go with me, and I didn't know how to contact the others. I felt left out the whole day. I normally wouldn't in this group, so it was really weird. I had a huge headache I couldn't get rid of.
The feeling was honestly all over the house, not as intense as in that room, but it was a really weird, tense feeling, and I could see it was affecting everyone else. People were having a really hard time working together. You know, people who'd been working together great in Paris suddenly came here and we like couldn't get our points across. Everybody was super frustrated. And after a while, everybody started to notice I was always like away on this couch in the living room in the morning. And I remember pretending, oh, the room is stuffy. I'm a pathetic American. I don't know. I kind of came up with reasons why I wouldn't sleep in that room. But another friend of mine, Mariana, invited me. She said, oh, well, just come share my bed. I have a double bed. We can share my bed. And so I went and slept in her room that night, thinking it was the solution to my problem.
I asked Caroline to go into my room at some point. And then she was sleeping with me in that big bed. And then at night, I don't remember if she woke me up or I woke her up or we just woke.
So I woke up in the middle of the night to the sound of angry footsteps that were circling the bed. They were pacing around it. The steps would kind of circle the three sides of the bed, which was pushed against the wall. So it would cross around from Mariana's pillow down to the foot of the bed and across the bed and cross up to my pillow.
And you could hear these footsteps, clop, 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 by the bed. And it was very angry footsteps. I don't know if you know that you can hear the difference between like how people feel. It's very clear with kids, like they will stamp the floor when they are angry. But, you know, if you have heels and just go do, 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 like pacing by the bed one way, the other way, one way, by the end of the bed, back again, one way, the other way. It just kept going. And I don't remember for how long, but it was really like there was this angry atmosphere. I could just feel that anger in the air. It was a very unpleasant night.
And the footsteps, this is the worst. Footsteps would pause next to my pillow, and I felt like it was staring at me, but I wouldn't look, so it would then repeat the path. And this happened multiple times. I had not usually been afraid by these experiences, and I was terrified. So I kept my eyes closed for, like, I remember 3 or 4 cycles of walking in a circle and pausing by my pillow, not wanting to open my eyes and see what was there. I was turned out facing the outside of the bed on my side, such that when it would pause and what I felt like look at me, I would have been able to look at it if I opened my eyes, and I couldn't bring myself to do it. The degree of the anger and fury, too, was on like a whole other level of presence from even where it had been in the library. So after 3 or 4 rounds of this tracing of footsteps around the bed, as it was sort of moving toward the foot of the bed on my side, I kept my eyes closed and I turned to see if Mariana was awake. And I opened my eyes and her eyes were wide open, like inches from mine, completely terrified, round, huge blue eyes in my face. And that kind of emboldened me to sit up and respond. And that sounds brave. It wasn't. It was just like I waited until the spirit was kind of walking away from me. The footsteps were walking away from me to the corner of my bed, and I spoke. I don't remember what I said. I was pretty used to this by now, so I tended to say stuff like, hello, I see you, what's going on, or what's going on. So what I saw was like a smoky outline of a figure. My memory of it is kind of that it was like a dark purple blob, almost like a lava lamp would look, but it was in a pretty dark room, but you could kind of see where I couldn't see through the form. That was the form. It felt like a female form, but I didn't see like a face. It was turned away, was my impression, and it didn't turn and look at me, but it did listen, like it stopped when I spoke. And I said something like, you know, we're here, we're leaving soon, we're not going to be here forever, but you need to share this space while we're here. It felt like firmer than I felt in the moment. And we waited, like Mariana and I in the spirit all just sort of sat still and waited for this horrible pregnant pause. And I think I was waiting to see if she would do or say anything. And after a few moments like that of waiting, the footsteps picked up again, but they walked away from me, like out toward the corner of the room, which was, you know, an outside wall on the house, and just sort of disappeared out of wall, really. And she never came back to that room that I stayed in for the remainder of our stay. She did go and bother another friend of ours, an Argentine woman who was there, and she was on the far end of the house. Jill also felt that intense anger, a shadowy figure, sort of overwhelming sense of screaming in her ear that she had some sensitivities too, which I didn't know about until we talked about there.
I was looking through some photo albums in the house. It's a family house, so there was photo albums of the family. And at one point, Jill just went pale and pointed in the book and said, I've seen her. This is the one. That's her. That's the one I've seen. And Emmanuel, who owned the house, his family owned the house, we hadn't told him about the ghost for some reason. We thought he wouldn't like that idea. So he was looking in the book and he went, No, that can't be her. She committed suicide.
So Mariana and Gila and I discussed it and decided to sort of, to bring it up to our host at the house to see if he had anything to say about it or had experienced anything. He had not. He didn't have a sense of it. But he told us that his aunt, he had like a spinster aunt, I guess, who had died in the house about 15 years before, and he described her as like a very bitter and difficult person who was disappointed by herself and had been the one sibling to stay behind while everyone else went off to Paris and built a life, and she had stayed and taken care of their parents. And she was sort of a disgruntled character who had passed away in the house. And it was interesting because then finally as a group we were able to discuss the difficulties we'd had being able to work together as artists and like acknowledge that the space had felt complicated in that way.
The experience was very, like, it was a common experience for all of us, but on shift, on turn. So I guess somehow I feel lucky that I could share it with Caroline, because otherwise I'm not sure I would have believed it yet, or still.
I was very relieved to finally leave that house after a week. So it was an unsettling experience to have such a negative spirit approach me. I mean, it sounds funny, but truly the spirits I experienced mostly in my childhood and leading up to that point, whenever I was about 24, 25, had either been looking for help or company or, amusement. And I had not really experienced such an intensely negative energy where, had I not had previous experiences like that, I would have thought it was me. I would have thought something was wrong with me, with our group, with kind of our inability to work together despite having worked so well in another place. You know, we had a lot of hopes bent on this workshop, this group of people coming to work all together in this idyllic farmhouse and create this amazing show that would, you know, cement us all as lifelong co-workers, and instead it kind of dismantled this group that was growing, this sort of intense, angry, hysterical, furious feeling, despite the fact that only, you know, 3 of 9 of us even experienced it in a literal way. It had been overtaking our whole experience of the week without knowing. And I think about, you know, what if I'd had that experience without this kind of special intuition into what might have caused some of the frustration in that group. It's funny to think about, especially when you think about other experiences you've had where there's like a negative space or a uncomfortable feeling, and you start to wonder, okay, how much of this is beyond the control of the human group that's actually standing there trying to work together. The woman in the farmhouse was really one of my first encounters with a negative, angry spirit. But she wasn't my last.
When we get back from this short break, Caroline will recount a truly unsettling experience she had while living on a boathouse on the River Seine. It involves a terrifying dream, a scuttled boat, an unsolved murder, and yes, another angry French spirit. Stay tuned. Let's face it, in times like now, we're home a lot. And if you have pets, you know there are new things that we are learning about cohabitating and working remotely with our furry pals. My dog, Coda, a young Australian Shepherd, has a ton of energy, and I let her out to play very often throughout the day. But when I'm on a Zoom call or need to do some recording for the show, her whines and barks can be a serious problem for my day job or the show. But thankfully, I've found something that helps take the edge off our anxious and excited pup when we need it. Green Mountain Flower Company has a line of CBD-infused pet treats for cats and dogs. I've been giving Coda some when there are thunderstorms, or I'm having an important Zoom meeting, or have serious deadlines to hit with recording narration for the show. She loves them and gobbles them up instantly, so I know they must taste good. But the effects are great as well. Coda is much calmer, is less anxious, and doesn't whine. And what's most important to me is that it's safe for her. Everything Green Mountain Flower Company sells is 100% organic, gluten-free, non-GMO, and without heavy metals or insecticides. And right now, through October, Night Owls get 10% off all their products by using the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Visit greenmountainflowercompany.com and check out all their other incredible CBD products, including pain-relieving balms, tinctures, supplements, gummies, and more pet treats. Elevate your spirit by harnessing the healing power of CBD. And before we return, we got a couple of cool announcements to run through as well. Firstly, as it has been for many, this pandemic has taken a toll on our little show in a big way. Back in March, as we began to pick up some momentum in our third year, we had a series of sold-out events in store for March, April, and May that suddenly had to be postponed. We were holding off thinking we might be able to put on the Spirit Social or reopen our group tours at Pioneer Farms after a while, but ultimately realized it would be impossible to have large crowds indoors or intimate groups of walking tours safely in times like now. Although events like the Spirit Social and large group ghost tours like we had planned are not fit for this new normal we're in, I realized I had to work hard to find a new normal for our events that would first and foremost be safe, and secondly, be a lot of fun and still embody the spirit of our show. It's taken a lot of work, a lot of planning, and we've taken a big hit refunding all these events to host a smaller one, but nonetheless, I'm very happy to announce Free Range Spirits at Pioneer Farms is happening. A new COVID-conscious designed event, outdoors on a 90-acre haunted farm, with serious care taken to put safety protocols in place for everyone attending. The event will feature an outdoor market, food trucks, a costume contest, a live ghost story pre-show, and a drive-in screening of John Carpenter's The Fog. On this special night, we'll also be premiering our one-of-a-kind, fully immersive, self-guided audio ghost tour of Pioneer Farms. All you need is your smartphone and a pair of earbuds, and you can head off on the dark trails exploring the haunted sites with yours truly as your guide virtually through your phone. This audio ghost tour will be an optional add-on you can purchase at the event for $15. This event is limited to 60 parking passes with varying amounts of passengers that you can RSVP for. However, I'm sorry to say that we have already nearly hit capacity with only about 4 RSVPs remaining. But I still encourage you, if you're interested, RSVP anyway, because we'd love to put you on the waiting list and see how the demand for this type of event really is. To those who have stood by us, supporting us in the many ways that you do, on Patreon or buying our merchandise, or helping us sell out these awesome events, we thank you. We've already initiated all the refunds to everyone who had purchased tickets to our canceled events, and if you have any questions regarding this, don't hesitate to email us at thenightowlpodcast@gmail.com. We also had two other really unique opportunities at Pioneer Farms. We have been given the opportunity to host an overnight campout. It's eerie, it's going to be amazing, but we already sold out. We had two dates, October 3rd and November 21st, but if you're interested in events like this, always shoot me an email at thenightowlpodcast@gmail.com and let me know. You never know when someone might not feel great or have to refund their ticket, and if we have someone in the waiting list, we'd be happy to share that ticket with you. Secondly, our self-guided audio ghost tour of Pioneer Farms that I mentioned earlier is premiering at Free Range Spirits on October 17th, but will permanently be available to everyone from that day on. In an attempt to adapt to these times and expand our show's offerings, this unique one-of-a-kind ghost tour is perfect for the season and these new challenging times we live in. This audio tour allows you to take a ghost tour on your own, at your own pace, and remain safe and socially distant the whole time. So what's the tour like? If I could describe it, I'd say it's an immersive, interactive version of our episodes on Pioneer Farms. It's all there, the history, the true accounts, and our team's discoveries and theories. But I've taken it all and created an experience that you can have on site, guided by my voice and an exclusive haunted map of Pioneer Farms that we've designed. The entire trail is 1 mile long, and the tour averages about 1.5 to 2 hours in length to take. But you're not limited to that. We encourage everyone to take as much time as they want and enjoy the beauty that is Pioneer Farms while you're there. Please note that in our partnership with the farm, you will be required to pay the farm's general admittance fee when you arrive, which goes to support this incredible living history museum. Our audio tour is a separate purchase through our website and goes to support us, the Night Owl Podcast. To read up on all the details, visit our events page on thenightowlpodcast.com and mark your calendars for October 18th. The audio tour will be publicly available to purchase for everyone starting then.
The woman in the farmhouse was really one of my first encounters with a negative, angry spirit. But she wasn't my last. I'm going to tell you another story that happened to me a couple years later in France. It was on a boat in Paris. Sounds very romantic. It was. I was living there as kind of a caretaker in exchange for cheap rent and the chance to live on a boat docked on the River Seine across from this beautiful park, the Bois de Boulogne. The boat was this barge-style boat. There's a lot of them in Paris that are docked on the River Seine. My landlady had converted it into a houseboat in the 70s and raised her family. But at the time, she was living several hours from Paris and just rented out a couple of the cabins on the boat to artist types like me who would put up with the cold and the sort of creakiness of living on a boat in exchange for the romance of living on the water. So the story begins. I woke one morning in my tiny cabin from a terrifying dream. It's important to know that the story unfolded in the day after I woke up from this dream experience. So that morning, I left the boat while it was still dark to go to work and came back again in the dark. It was winter. And as I was making dinner, I saw the whirling siren lights of a police boat speed by my window. And a few minutes later, the French police knocked on the door to ask about the whereabouts of my neighbor who lived the next boat over. I didn't really know him. I had just sort of waved. And I hadn't seen him, honestly, in months. And I told them so. So the officer said, you know, get in touch with us if you see him. But they didn't give me any other information. I thought it was really unusual. So after the police left, I went to the window to kind of peek out at the neighboring boat. And I hadn't noticed it when I returned from work because it was dark. And I came from the opposite direction. But the boat was scuttled. Like the hull of the boat was resting on the bottom of the river with the stern of the boat kind of peeking up from the surface, you know, like the Titanic. So I immediately call my landlady to ask, do you know where our neighbor is? I didn't tell her what was going on right away. I just asked her, the police came and they're asking for our neighbor. Do you know? I didn't know what to tell them. And she said, oh yes, the neighbor is in jail. Okay. And she said it's for tax evasion, super minor crime. But she said, but that is not the crime he deserves to be in for. This lady was a real storyteller. And of course, I took the bait and said, what do you mean? So she described to me, more or less, 15 years ago, approximately, the young woman that lived on the boat, my neighbor's neighboring boat, she was a friend of my landlady's. And the woman was young and beautiful and really funny, a great lady. She described her life as a mess. She was a messy person. Her possessions were a mess. Her life was a mess. And she picked the wrong boyfriends. So apparently one night, one of them killed her and tipped her overboard, and just like that became the new owner of the boat and my neighbor. So I'm immediately thinking, okay, I've lived here about a year and a half. I didn't know any of this. How do you know this? So she described that the woman had been her friend, and that she had complained about the way that this boyfriend treated her, his jealousy. After she disappeared, the police asked my landlady to look around the boat to see if anything was out of place. And of course, she's thinking, well, everything's always out of place on this boat. But that night, there was one thing that wasn't out of place. Only one thing. It was the woman's nightgown, which was neatly folded on the bed, which my landlady felt would never have happened. And she felt somebody else must have done it. And her theory was that this neighbor, this boyfriend who still owns the boat, had done it. And someone else had folded the nightgown after she entered the water, never to surface again. Because when the police questioned the boyfriend after this information, he insisted he didn't know anything about it and started accusing anybody else of having killed his girlfriend and pushed her in the water, which is new information. Nobody had heard this yet. So the police, on this information, swept the river for the body and found her body below her own boat. For whatever reason, they lacked the evidence to prosecute the boyfriend under the law, so he actually never did any time for this. He also never moved out of the boat. So many years later, he was still the kind of de facto resident of the boat right next to mine, the one that now lay like half submerged in the water, in the bed of the river. So now I should tell about the dream, in quotes, that happened that morning. Before I knew anything about the boat or the woman or the neighbor, any of this information. So I say dream because it was like a dream, except that it exactly replicated my waking life in the sense that I was sleeping in the dream. I was sleeping in my bed in the stern of the boat, which is where I was while asleep, right? While I slept, I saw a drowned woman with floating hair, screaming with no noise, but screaming underwater. And what she wanted more than anything, I felt, was to claw and bite her way through the hull of the boat to get to where I was in my bed. I can never forget this scraping sound of her fingernails and her teeth. She was biting into the hull of the boat, trying to get at what felt like me. I thought it was me. I thought I was the object of her fury and hatred. I lay petrified. I could not move. I was completely convinced she could bite and scratch her way through the metal hull of this boat to drown me in my sleep. It felt inevitable and that there was nothing I could do. I could hear her nails just scratching at the boat, inches below my head, at the same time that I could see her from below, as if I were in the water and simultaneously in my bed. Under the water, it was very dimly lit, with her long hair sort of swirling around her. Her teeth looked to me like pointed, like I felt like her hands were claws, her nails were like rubbed down to the stubs in the duration of the dream as she was trying to get at me. And I felt the visceral hatred and fury and desire, and all of it felt as though it were directed at me. I felt that she wanted to kill me and make me drown, to make me suffer. But when I woke, in quotations, I thought, oh, it was a dream. And it was morning. But I had felt so sure she would get through the hole and kill me. And what I didn't know then, until I learned later that night, was that she did succeed in breaking through the hole. She scuttled the boat, but it was not my boat that she scuttled. It was the boat next to mine, the boat that her murderer stole from her, that, you know, along with her life. Unfortunately, he wasn't actually there when the boat was scuttled. He was doing time for a very minor crime in jail and did return. He was released a few months later and showed back up at the boat. He did repair and float it, and I had to live next to him for a couple more years. But the drowned woman never visited me again. And sometimes I think about like how much energy it must have taken her spirit to enact actual physical harm on this metal boat, and how long it must have been, that chipping away at the hole to try to take him out. And I guess I hope she felt some satisfaction in scuttling the boat, even if she didn't get what it felt to me that she was after, that revenge. I don't believe that I ever told my landlady about the dream. I think because it was in an era of my life when I didn't talk about it. I guess I had never felt the aggressions of a spirit directed at me, for whatever reason it was that I kind of took on the anger that she felt for the person next to me, in the fact that he wasn't there, and it transferred over to me. But it's a relief in a way to know that it wasn't really me she was after, that it was somebody else. And also, like, kind of terrifying to realize that she had the capacity to actually break through a metal hold boat. So in many ways, I had shut these stories and experiences away at the urging of my husband to listen to the Night Owl podcast, which was a terrifying experience for me at first to feel the affirmation of other people who experienced similar things, because I had really shied away from looking into that and learning more about it. Since listening to the podcast, I'm feeling a lot of these capacities sort of slowly opening back up, and begun to notice spirits again in my periphery and in my surroundings. There are some that I often see walking on the sides of roads, which was real common for me in my teenage and early 20s. And now I've started noticing them again, sort of like little pilgrims on the side of roads. And I see them around Austin, especially on certain roads. And even more particularly, some spirits that are starting to hang around on my front porch sometimes in the evenings. They stand outside the kitchen window and look in. And I don't get a fully embodied person like before. It's kind of a flash before it's gone, either a person or a shadow or a shape. And at first I was shutting it out completely, immediately, like, go away, and it would go. But I'm starting to remember to learn how to relax and enjoy their presence as I used to before the scarier experiences happened. And just kind of let them in and acknowledge that they're going to look at me and look at my family. And I've even started going out to greet them and to say, hey, I'm trying to say the nice words out loud, like, hey, it's cool, you're here. And I don't know that I fully feel as welcoming as the words that I'm saying out loud, but I'm practicing saying it out loud. And it does make a difference.
I'd like to thank Caroline for stepping out of her comfort zone and braving the stage last year to tell these stories at our live event. Please take a moment to check out the incredible work she does through her theater company at glasshalffulltheater.com. That's theater with an R-E. It's good to hear that Caroline is once again embracing her gift and slowly learning how to communicate with the spirits who come into her life. I find it to be positive to hear that she's no longer trying to suppress the ability and is actually able to open up and share her story with others. I hope if you're out there listening and you have been going through struggles similar to Caroline, that this story helps you as well. But if you find yourself struggling, you know you can always reach out to the Night Owl Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this spooky little campfire. Thank you to Caroline and Marianne for sharing your experiences with us. It's bittersweet to see we've reached the end of our third season, knowing that our third year we had to face a lot of challenges and weren't able to do as many investigations as planned. But in the end, I'm proud to have finished the season out with some great campfire episodes. We'll continue to release new campfire episodes on the last Monday of every month until our new investigations are running smoothly and complete. We actually have begun a new COVID-safe style of investigating and may have a new investigative episode premiering at the start of our new season on October 26th. Stay tuned for that. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter on our website, thenightowlpodcast.com. Follow us on Instagram or Facebook at The Night Owl Podcast, and consider becoming a patron and supporting our show on patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast to stay up to date with our show's news and events. Stay restless out there, everyone, and we'll see you in October. I'd like to thank my investigative team, Sarah, Alexis, Franklin, and Tao, for going on these crazy adventures with me. Nicholas Fair for his talented musical contributions to this show. Jennifer for managing our merch, Patreon, and many other irrational tasks I throw her way. My dad Sam for his incredible historical research. Bo for helping produce this busy indie show. Mikey for his assistance editing this particular episode. And thanks to Sean for his help with our story submissions, Alicia for her creative design work and marketing, and lastly, Sandra for keeping us all on schedule and on budget. And a very special shout out to my wife, Tao, for sticking with me all these late nights and long hours, and for taking amazing photographs on every case. And last but not least, David Dalton of Driftwork Sound for mastering every single episode on the tight turnarounds I give him. Please support their works by visiting our website, thenightowlpodcast.com, and clicking on the About tab. There you can find links to all their individual works and websites. And a special thank you to this episode's sponsor. If you're ready to elevate your spirit with the healing power of CBD, give Green Mountain Flower Company a try. For a limited time only, get 10% off all their products using coupon code NIGHTOWL. Visit greenmountainflowercompany.com. This podcast was mastered by David Dalton of Driftwork Sound. If you're ready to up the production quality of your podcasts or music, go to driftworksound.com. That's DRIFTWorksound.com. And get your project mixed, mastered, or produced using well-established methods and unconventional techniques. That's driftworksound.com. And remember, your first master is completely free.